I'm your host, Garth Braithwaite, and this is Web Friends. Welcome to the show. In this episode, we're going to try something a little different. In a second, you're going to hear an interview with Aaron Wade, someone I have yet to meet in person. We're going to make a new friend together. So full disclosure, I've already heard the episode and it turns out really well. Also, I've never talked to Aaron prior to this interview, but we have collaborated on an open source project, so he wasn't a perfect stranger. Before the interview, let me tell you a little bit about Aaron Wade. He's a designer at Slacker Radio. Also, he's created a really neat project called Precomposed that is a bunch of animations that indicate touch gestures. It's something that, if you're making animated GIFs for Dribbble that indicate some mobile UI transition, you could overlay these touch gestures to indicate what the user's doing to make this animation occur or this transition happen. So now that you know a little bit about Aaron, let's get to the interview right after a quick word from our sponsor.
This episode of Web Friends is sponsored by Campaign Monitor. Sending email campaigns doesn't need to be a chore. Campaign Monitor makes it fun, easy, and beautiful. Try your hand at their template builder and have a responsive email template ready in 60 seconds. Campaign Monitor also lets you offer their services to your clients at your prices. And if you need help creating better emails, Campaign Monitor just released a free ebook with their top 100 email campaigns of 2013. Go to campaignmonitor.com and get started today.
All right, Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So, first question, what is some of the best advice that you've received? As you've been a web developer or any time in your work, what is some of the best advice that you've received?
So I have to say it was probably before I decided to do any kind of creative work professionally, before I did any kind of design or development professionally. I was doing sports at the time, and I remember I just made a complete idiot out of myself playing football. This was at the very end of my high school career, and I was made an example of in front of the entire team and game film, and it was super embarrassing. And I was so ashamed of myself, and I went home, you know, kind of drooping over. Dad kind of asked me what's up, told him what happened, and he said it a little more explicitly, but he said if you're effing up, eff up at 100%. And I thought that was interesting because, you know, at first I didn't understand. Like, I was like, what does that even mean? Like, what is he trying to say to me? But it's one of those things that kind of grows on you over time. When you screw up at 100%, you sometimes can take something that wasn't meant to be a specific way and make something out of it. Like, you take an unfortunate event, and because you didn't, I guess, half-ass anything, you can really kind of rescue something great out of it, or turn something negative into a positive. So that's something that I've been trying to do ever since I realized that that's kind of what he meant by it. That's, you know, don't just put half of whatever it is you're doing into something. Give it everything you got, no matter if it's good or bad.
So did that change the way, like you mentioned, like it took a little bit to set in. Did that change the way that you were doing, in that case, football at the time?
I don't think it took immediate effect on me so much as it's just something that really stuck out to me. It's one of those like dad lessons that I don't know, you don't really forget. It was confusing at first, but the more I thought about it and the more like I matured and grew up with it, now it's something that I think about all the time. I, you know, I might not be doing something 100% correct, but if I give it absolutely everything I have inside of me, you know, do it the best of my ability, more often than not, it works out and much better than you think it's going to.
Gotcha. So if your life was a movie or a TV show, you'd have a flashback to your dad telling you that.
Totally.
Once in a while.
Exactly that.
Gotcha. All right. So do you have any examples of something in your life since then that you felt like that actually worked out or helped you?
That's a great question. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's a lot of, I get the driving thing behind what really kind of got me into a lot of the development stuff, because I was doing design originally before I was going to school, and when I finally got into college, my degree was in design, and I'd never really thought about doing any kind of development or was really had any interest. And I think that was just because I hadn't bothered to check it out. And then you're into situations where you don't want to have to wait up on other people to, you know, you don't want to lean on somebody else to, hey, I need this site done. Can you build it out for me? Can you start coding it for me? Or, hey, can we trade work to, you know, like you can benefit from this. We can both benefit.
Yeah.
So for me, it was, you know, really started fumbling through picking up the pieces by looking at other people's websites, looking at their source, following tutorials, and F up at 100%. It was really kind of poaching a lot of other people's material and just doing things absolutely wrong. But you get to a point where somebody can look at it and critique it. You know, it's kind of validating. It's like, yeah, okay, I didn't do this the right way, but I did it as best I could, and I understand as much as what I got in there, and now I've got this great direction to kind of go forward and polish it off and make it better. And yeah, I don't know. That kind of goes forward into a lot of the stuff that I do now. You know, you do something and you kind of have this Frankenstein product, and but I mean, it's getting your foot in the door, and I guess screwing up that first time is how you begin to really learn and kind of Miyagi yourself into knowing how to do those things better in the future.
That was a great verb. That was great. No, and it sounds like a great antidote for paralyzing perfectionism, which is rampant in the creative process, where
yeah,
I don't want to do it because I can't figure out how to do it perfect yet, so I'm just not going to do anything.
Yeah. Kind of once you kind of break out of your box, and I don't know, once you screw up once, twice, you know, 10 times, the sting of you know, oh, I just failed at this, it kind of goes away. It just dissipates. You're like, oh man, okay, I didn't do it good this time, but that doesn't mean I'll never have an opportunity to try it again or keep going at, you know, what I just did.
Yeah. So we were talking also before we started recording, we were talking about the open source design and the contribution you made there. And you mentioned that the design community sometimes is daunting. That seems like another stumbling block for a lot of designers is, I don't want to put something out there because I'm going to be judged.
Yeah.
Yeah. How have you gotten around that? Because you ship stuff, you get stuff out there, and you've worked on projects. So
I think the big hurdle is, I don't know, really, for me, it was a couple things. Anything that I was unsure about, I'd try to put out there on a very small scale by sending it to friends or friends of friends and seeing if, you know, is this useful to you? For instance, like those touch gestures, wasn't positive about if, you know, like, are these going to be something that are going to be useful to other people, or am I just doing it for kind of like flair? And usually you can get a pretty good set of feedback from people, honest feedback, when I guess it's not so much in a public domain, and it doesn't hurt as bad if you get torn apart that way. So I started doing that. And another way I feel like is really trying to pair with somebody that you click with, whether that's somebody online or if that's somebody that you have in your local community. Take those relationships and you know, piggyback. Like, I know I said that term earlier as well. Like, use those friendships to your advantage, in the sense that you've got people on your side. You've got some more ammo, some firepower to start getting people behind the stuff that you're doing. And that's been extremely helpful for me, because you don't feel like you're standing by yourself anymore. You've got kind of people around you that are encouraging you and there to help you if you need it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. A lot of times I think we look at other people who have put something out there that becomes extremely successful, and we assume that it's just because they put something brilliant together and put it right out there, and the internet loves brilliance, and so it just keeps sending it around, when oftentimes there's a lot of work behind marketing free things, like open source projects that are really successful take a lot of work to get them to be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great point. You never ever see, well, you typically don't often see the really bad things that all of these guys that, you know, guys and girls that lead this industry that, you know, we all look up to, that are, you know, design role models for us. You almost always see the incredible things that they've done. And it's easy to assume that everything that they've done was kind of just like a grand slam at the very first try.
Yeah. Yeah, when they rarely are. That's a good point. And I love the idea of getting a community together to help encourage you. In Vegas, we actually have a Facebook group that is called the Vegas Hype Machine. And the whole point of it is a Facebook group where we post stuff that we're working on and say, hey, we'd love some support on this.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's been really fun.
It's as something that even if it's not like a group that you go and find, even if it's just a small group of people, if that's like coworkers or other peers that you're happy to be around, that's, I think, incredibly, incredibly encouraging, even if it's not direct, you know, just to have that feedback in a loop of people that you can trust, it gives you a lot of confidence.
Yeah. So have you found that to be helpful? Like where do you find these sort of people? Because it, you know, you got to walk that balance, right? You don't want to find yes people. I tell my wife, she's like, but you're such a good designer. I'm like, yeah, you're supposed to say that. You're my wife. or your mom being like, you're such a good artist.
Yeah.
Thanks, mom.
The continual support, no matter what. It's like, I believe in everything that you do.
Yeah. And like, you do need that. Don't get me wrong. I'm not downplaying that at all.
Right.
But there are times when you need like, yes, you're good, but this is terrible.
Right.
So how do you find those people, or how have you found those sort of people?
It really has started from a lot of, I guess, beginning steps that I was taking towards networking. Actually, as I was finishing up college in Las Vegas, I joined the local AIGA chapter out there and was doing all of their interactive work for some of the events that they were throwing. And, you know, I was like the youngest guy on the board, and everybody was so like, everybody was veteran in print and advertising, and I felt so like, how do I approach getting good feedback from these guys when, you know, they're all print? And so I started asking them for their you know, connections, if it was people they've employed or people that they know are kind of doing something similar in the Las Vegas area. And I got hooked up with a guy named Michael Saka, who now actually has a company down here in San Diego. But I started talking with him, as he was the old interactive designer for the AIGA group in Las Vegas. And that was probably my first, I guess, career changing connection.
Mm-hmm.
And he was exactly what you're trying to say, that he will tell you, you know, hey, this is really good. Everything about this part of the project is great, but you need to stop and you need to fix this. And I'd never had that before. And especially in a nice way. I didn't feel like he was, you know, vindictive at all. He's very honest and forward, and it's just pleasant. And it kind of started that way. And ever since then, it's just, I don't know, for me, like, I've found a lot of people on Twitter recently, kind of down in the Southern California, San Diego area. And it starts off with something as simple as a tweet. If they reply, you know, like, we'll go and get a drink and start talking and meet up at coffee shops. So, yeah.
That's cool. So do you have any local user groups or anything like that where you're at?
I got to be honest with you. I haven't looked into it. There are a lot of meetups down here. Mm-hmm. Like, we have a tech foosball meetup. When I say we, I mean, I go to a tech foosball meetup. And that's actually a pretty great way to meet a lot of the tech companies down here in San Diego. But outside of that, I haven't like explicitly set up a group. It's something I was curious in doing. And I was actually talking to an owner of a small company down here in San Diego about organizing like the creative mornings.
Yeah.
Down here. But I don't know. It's a hard thing to do. You really have to figure out that whole work-life balance thing and how much time you can allocate towards kind of directing a lot of that stuff. It takes a ton of work.
Yeah. Yeah. Community management's pretty crazy, especially when you get into like the physical stuff. If it's just all online, it's a little bit different. But when you're like, hey, we're going to meet up once a month, and that's going to take a night away from whatever else you were planning on doing that month.
Yeah, exactly. And then, oh yeah, we have to get a hold of the place that we're going to go hang out at and make sure that it's, you know, they have enough room and make sure. Yeah.
And then you've got to deal with RSVPs because no one.
That's always fun.
It's never honest. That's like the hardest thing. I know a couple of meetups where they actually charge like $2 just because people who pay $2 are much more likely to actually show up.
That's, you know, that's actually pretty smart. And this is all stuff that I'm completely just a total virgin on, because the thought of it seems cool, but I've not executed on anything like it yet.
Yeah. Well, and then you've got things like, you've got the problem of what's the goal of the group. Cause I found my community is much smaller. San Diego, you probably have a different, kind of group there, but, you have the people who are completely new. You've got the people mm-hmm. who want to do a startup, but all they have is an idea and no skill necessarily. Mm-hmm. And then you've got cool people that you like to hang out with. So I like the idea of your tech foosball meetup, because you're really only going to get people who want to hang out. You're not going right. to get people with ulterior motives that really last long there. So,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. So the next question then is if this is some of the best advice that you've gotten, or is there anything else you wanted to add to that one before we move on to the next question?
No, I think we covered the good gamut there.
Okay. So if that's some of the best advice that you can remember, what's some of the stuff that you've learned kind of the hard way that if you could go back to past Aaron, that you would tell yourself if you had a way back machine?
Okay. I immediately knew the advice I would give myself when I saw that, you know, like, this is the question. And I would definitely say hands down that no amount of money is worth your happiness. When I was going to college and I was working more than it was practically a full-time job. I was 30, 35 hours a week, and I was taking on contract work like crazy. And I think it's because, you know, your family, they're always encouraging you, hey, you know, work hard and, you know, get a lot of money. You're going to be happy if you've got the means to kind of live a comfortable life. And I think they mean well, so, like, sentimentally, that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. You know, they just want you to be, you know, in a good spot, and, you know, they don't want to see you fail.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think we can grind so hard in design and development that we really start to lose track of everything else. And for, I'd say, a good solid 2 years, all I was doing was working, schooling, and freelancing. And I started seeing dips in health. I started losing some friendships. And it was all because I think I took that a little too seriously. And I didn't really stop to think, like, hey, you know, I'm probably going to be doing a lot better work if I give myself the recess from stepping away from the computer and stepping away from the code, the design, and just get out there and refresh. You know, I was stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a good bit of advice, and that's a good problem that you had.
That's fantastic.
But so there's a couple questions that pop up though. Like, it's one of those things that are easy to say, hard to do. How do you find that? Like, what are red flags for you? That's a good way of putting it. When you're in a place where you're like, okay, something's going wrong, mm-hmm. and I need to make a change, what are some of those early red flags that you see?
I would say the first one is that I can't get to, if it's I'm leaving work or I'm leaving school or whatever it is I'm doing, if I'm thinking about what I have to do next and it doesn't make me feel pleasant, that's the first red flag.
Mm.
Immediately. I mean, if you don't have a good feeling about something, then why are you putting yourself through it? And again, like, easier said than done. At the same time, it's like, you know, you want to be loyal to any kind of agreements that you've made, and, you know, you kind of have to tough through it at that point. But
yeah.
I think more importantly is that I need to like learn to not put myself in those situations to begin with. And then, you know, it's fixed.
Yeah.
And
easy,
like,
peasy.
I don't
just never have problems. Done. Nailed it.
So, I mean, like, yeah, no, it's don't say yes to stuff that, you know, you're not going to be happy doing.
Yeah.
I'm like a people pleaser, and I have such a hard time saying no.
Yeah. And I mean, we are inherently, we are programmed to be problem solvers. So when we see challenging problems, we want to say, I have a way to fix that.
Yeah, no, exactly. And
sometimes we don't even ask ourselves the question first, do I want to do that?
And maybe that's just the way that our industry has kind of set the tone. I'm not sure. I get a lot of, I mean, maybe and recently it hasn't been that way. There have been a lot of really insightful things that a lot of people have written about, kind of really taking your time and not making work feel like work. But I don't know, maybe it was just me coming out of the grind in college and just kind of not really switching off.
Yeah.
I just kept going and doing the same things.
I think it's interesting. You also mentioned your family. I mean, most likely we people who are in a web development, web design, interaction design, whatever sort of industry are doing something that our parents are completely unfamiliar with.
Yes.
Parents or, you know, extended family, or it's an industry, it's a job that they didn't exist, right? The platform itself didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so them relating their work-life experience to us is a little tricky because it's not like, oh, you're so old and it was so different back then, you have nothing to offer me, because that's not true either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Doubt. But trying to help relate the communication between that generation gap can be a little tricky.
And it's such a different time. You know, all the men in my family they're like mechanics and they did like car restorations and stuff like that. Very, very tough men. And I chose a career in computer stuff, and they were confused. They're like, how do you make a living doing computer stuff? So there's that too.
Yeah. I always love to tell people, because I have this list of responses. When people ask me, what do you do? I kind of have a list that I start to go down, and we find the one where it relates to them and they're like, okay, I got it.
Right.
And usually it starts with, I draw pictures. Like I start with the simplest, and if like they don't bite on that, then that's good. That's where we leave it.
That's a great way of I guess kind of drilling it down. I've noticed that they don't really care to ask. They're like, yeah, he does something on the computer, and
yeah,
he, you know, he makes a living off it, so that's cool, I guess.
and I totally relate to that, because like if I was talking to a mechanic, there are things that we can talk about for a while. But I'm not so arrogant as to believe that I could be completely interesting to them when it comes to work stuff. Because
yeah,
my knowledge of that area is so basic that I would be sitting there and absorbing whatever they have to say, and I wouldn't have much to contribute to the conversation. So
yeah, that's a problem that I often run into, and I could recite movie lines from, you know, movies about cars, but that's about it.
Oh, I'm sure that's condescending. But there are still great things that we can learn from these other industries, like the fact that web design, web development, and we're going back to the example of the auto mechanic, it's a service-based industry. Like, they've had to go through things like, all right, how much am I going to charge this person who comes in with a problem that I don't even know what the problem is, let alone how to solve it? And they're going to say, how much are you going to charge me for this? And I'm going to hold you to that. Like, there are a lot of lessons that as an industry, we're still trying to figure out.
Yes.
And they have some experience on us, and there's some metaphors that we can actually draw from with things that they've provided. So,
yeah, I fully agree. I some of the stuff I think is a little more abstract. Like there's a lot of, I guess, general advice that a lot of the, you know, the men in my family can pass down that is still relatively applicable, because, you know, it's the sentiment that you just shared, like, they have to still deal with a lot of the stuff that we have on our plates with, you know, customer interaction and making sure that the job gets done, that the estimate is, you know, right, and that it works. So,
yeah. And we're in an interesting place in our industry where we, for the most part, other than when you first get started, once you get a couple of years under your belt, it's not hard to get to a point where you can be a little bit more picky about what you want to do.
Yes.
Not completely. Like, I mean, we've got to make money, and that takes work. And work, like, oftentimes is not fun. That's why it's work. Like, that's just the nature of work. But more than other industries, we can oftentimes be like, I don't really want to do that. That doesn't sound like something that interests me.
Yeah. That's so true. That's so true. And I that's probably a lot of the reason why I've started to really kind of hone in on personal projects, is because those are things that I'm passionate about. Those are things that are going to get me excited to work on. And you can kind of keep it in your own head. You only have to answer to yourself at that point.
So this brings up a good point. So you've got the, let's imagine your advice. You go back to your past self and you said, hey, don't do projects that aren't fun, or, you know, there are certain points at which you need to get a better work-life balance. Mm-hmm. How do you make that transition? You realize that you're in a project that is going south. And your immediate impulse, at least for me, was like fight or flight almost. Like it's, mm-hmm. I got to get out of this thing. This is terrible. It's bringing me down. It's time to fire my client and move on. Mm-hmm. Like what is a procedure that you would recommend to somebody who realizes that they're in this sort of situation?
I would say communication is key. I mean, I know that there are so many different variables in a lot of these projects that anybody could be involved with. And as long as you're communicating your perspective, where you're standing, I've never explained myself fully to a client and had them misunderstand me entirely. So I would say definitely, as soon as you start to feel that something's going bad, say it. The longer you keep it in, the more you're going to pent up a lot of that resentment, the anger, the frustration, and it's just going to end in just awful, awful mess. So get it out there as quick as you can.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. I think we've talked about this before on a previous episode, but designers and developers are not, especially developers, we're not very good at giving bad news. We do not like to.
Yes.
We'll avoid communicating to a person until we fix the problem so that it's not bad news. We only have good news.
That's so true. It's so true.
And I think that throws in kind of into the red flag that you mentioned, that when you're sitting there thinking about what do I have to do next and you don't feel good about it, is another one is, are you avoiding talking to your client or whoever the shareholder is, stakeholder,
yeah.
In this project because it's not in a good place right now.
Exactly. And then the whole, I mean, outside of the real problem, they start to wonder if there's another issue at hand, and then you end up kind of having to field two problems,
yeah,
and it just ends badly.
Yeah. And sometimes your client or the stakeholder, they jump to conclusions where it's something like, oh, this guy's trying to screw us. He's trying to get money and not finish the project or something like that.
Yep.
And they think the worst, and they sometimes, like you said, they think worse than what the actual problem is.
Yeah.
So that's a good point. Bring up bad news when it happens. And even try to prep your client if it's client work before. Like if you can, not that we're clairvoyant, but when you're starting a project and you can say, I'm worried about this area of the project, it's very likely that we're going to have a problem because I've never done this before, and I'll try and keep you in the loop, but I'm worried about it.
Yes. I mean, at that point, you know, I don't know, you've put out as much honesty as you can. They're aware of everything. You can do whatever you can to, I guess, buffer it so you have an easy experience and they have a full understanding of what's going on when you go into it.
Yeah, that's good. So it is nice, like you mentioned, you're moving on from doing client projects. You're using more of your time to do personal projects, things like the pre-compose, mm-hmm. touch gestures that you put out. How do you make money though, right? Because that's the other thing. So I highly recommend people should do personal projects at least once in a while that are like 100% personal, not client-based, where you are in control of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes people will come back with, well, I have to make money and pay rent. So how's that working out for you?
For me personally, it was more of a put something out there that is useful and meaningful. I don't keep any of the purchases, any of the money that I get from the pre-compost stuff, I donate it. And that was a decision that I made for a couple reasons. Like I said, it's meaningful. I know it's hopefully going to a good cause. I mean, but you know, like some people are weird about like, I guess endorsing a product before they've used it. And the whole idea was, you know, you share the gestures, you get the gestures. And so I, you know, I gave both options. You can tweet it, download it, or pay a small fee to get access to them. And it was never really in my mind something that I thought I was going to make a lot of money on. And, you know, maybe when it grows later this year, it can turn into something that makes money. But for me, I guess, I never really had that concern because I do work a full-time job.
Yeah.
And I wanted to start it off small initially on purpose just so if, you know, if it doesn't take off, okay, you know, it was fun. I had a good time building it. I don't regret anything. But if it did take off, I wouldn't have to work a full day's worth of work and then come home and give 6-7 hours of support for people who are requesting it. Because that then I've put myself in the exact position that I was trying to get away from.
I love that 6-7 hours of support on videos. And the funny thing is when you're first doing it, you're like, no one would need that much. But then, no, there would be somebody. It would be like, I paid my money. What is it, $2?
But, I mean, right now, yeah, it's like $2.
Yeah, so there would totally be somebody who's like, I paid my $2. Teach me how to use Photoshop now.
Exactly. And if something goes wrong at any part of the stage, they're like, no, it's not me. It's the product. The product's not working. You're like, oh, come on. It's okay. We'll get through this.
Yeah, as opposed to the hundreds of people who already used it and they haven't had a problem. Or maybe they were just lying to me. They were hiding
so, it. Yeah, I don't. I honestly wish I had better advice for people that were trying to monetize their personal projects. And maybe when I get to that stage, it will be worth writing up my experience and sharing that with people. So, you know, they have an idea of how they could get started.
So, for those who haven't seen it, if you go check out the website, and I'll put it in the show notes, the $2 goes to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. What was the idea behind that? Like, what started that? Because you could have also like said, hey, it's open source license, or you could have like there's lots of things that you could have done, or you could have said, hey, it's $5 to me. Mm-hmm. So what led you to this decision? Support, I understand, that's definitely part of it. When you're doing something that is based on charitable contributions, mm-hmm. There's a different expectation of support.
I think I just wanted to set a good example, I guess, for other designers that you can release something that's useful and do more than just try to put money in your pocket. You know, don't get me wrong, we all have to eat. We all have to take care of our families. Those are all things that are, you know, we're obligated to do. But I don't know. I want people to look at that and say, oh, okay, so, you know, this is a great thing. I might not have seen much of this before, but it's not sacred. Like he's not holding the cards straight to his chest and kind of taking this thing and running with it. He's really trying to make good from the very beginning to the very end.
Yeah, that's cool. I also like the idea of it from a licensing standpoint, right? Like part of selling stuff on your own, you have to worry about, to a certain extent, loss through piracy. And
yeah.
What is piracy gaining anyone other than screwing the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention?
Exactly.
So congrats to anyone who's done that. That's...
Yeah, props to you. Hope you feel good.
Well, that's funny. So we're gonna kind of wrap things up here. But I really want to recap some of the advice. If you're going to F up 100%, I think that's fantastic. Balls to the wall, right? Type of thing.
Yeah.
And then how did you phrase the work-life balance? You said,
I said no amount of money is worth your happiness.
There you go. I like that. Though it's hard to be happy without the bare necessities. So it's kind of that balance again of doing what it takes to be comfortable and knowing what that point is.
Totally.
Yeah. Okay.
Totally.
Okay. So F up 100% to be happy. So.
Yep.
I love that. So what do you have planned next then?
In terms of?
Anything. Is there anything that you've got that people should kind of keep an eye open for?
I seriously urge anybody who's curious about the pre-composed stuff, anybody who's taking their static designs and making them interactive, go sign up at the pre-composed page. I have plans to expand that quite a bit later this year and would love to have, you know, a pretty good user base kind of going out the gates.
Okay. Yeah. And I've seen, you've posted some stuff on Dribbble. That's kind of alluding to future stuff as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited.
So go follow Aaron on Twitter. It's Arius.
Yes.
ariuswade.com. And on GitHub, it's Arius, isn't it?
Yes.
And then on Dribbble, it's also Arius, but not Arius Wade. It's just
Arius.
And that's spelled A-R-E-U-S.
Go follow.
Go follow. and then go donate some money to the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention by picking up the pre-composed stuff.
Should do it.
It's a worthy cause, and it's a fun project. I'm really impressed. So
thank you. Thank you.
And a completely selfish plug. Go check out Aaron's post that he made on the open source design blog. I'll throw that on there as well. But he's made a good contribution, and we appreciate his efforts there too. So,
yes, come join us in open source design, please.
Yeah, we could. We could use some more fresh blood all the time. So,
yep.
All right. Well, thanks, Aaron. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Aaron was great. Thanks for listening in. So you just heard Aaron and I talking about why it's important we should avoid doing stuff we don't enjoy. But I wanted to clarify something. Sometimes we all do work that doesn't make us happy. In fact, sometimes it makes us unhappy. I guess I can't speak for everyone, but everyone I know has some work that they have intentionally left out of their portfolio, either because it's something we're not proud of or the experience of working on that project has somehow scarred us emotionally. What I'm getting at is it's okay to work on stuff we aren't happy about. Sometimes we have to pay bills. Sometimes we have projects that unexpectedly take a turn for the worst. What's not okay is continuing to do those sorts of projects. If you aren't happy with what you're doing, don't beat yourself up over it. Don't get depressed about it. Instead, figure out what action you need to take to get back on track for future projects. We're in control of that inner dialogue that we have with ourselves that tells us how we're doing, where we're going. Don't let perfectionism paralyze you. Don't get in your own head and don't let it bring you down. Let it lead you on to action that will get you to a better place. Thanks to Campaign Monitor for sponsoring this week's show. Thanks also to Good Stuff Broadcasting Network for making it possible for us to host this show live. Go check out goodstuff.fm to find out other great shows, including Transmission. In fact, I'll put in the show notes a link to Aaron Wade's show or interview on Transmission. Also, listen in live to Web Friends every Friday at noon Pacific at goodstuff.fm/live. Next week, we'll have Adam Morse on as a guest, so tune in for that. If you like the show, please go let us know by rating it in the iTunes store. There's a link to it on webfriends.io. Thanks again for listening. You are awesome.